C4. Number 11B.
The fourth subject principle. The epitome is that atonement demands, as a basis of demonstration, an understanding of fundamental scientific facts. It says, act on a principle, act on an understanding of your principle. Therefore, overcome the tendency within you to try to act according to universal beliefs, to people's belief, to personal beliefs, to the belief of your class, the belief of your race, the belief of the time. Act according to principle and not according to theological beliefs, to theories, to doctrines. Don't act according to the person of Jesus, she says. Act according to principle. Don't have any person as your guiding principle. Don't act as your teacher. Act according to the principle. Don't act according to Jesus. Act according to principle. This is the only authority we acknowledge. And so within us we have to overcome that sense that we should demonstrate our life on the basis of what is generally accepted as right according to common sense, what the Joneses do. Don't act according to that. Act according to principle, even if you are a loner, even if you stand alone. After all, we have to work out our salvation and not the salvation of the Joneses. And the Joneses don't help us to fulfill our salvation. They don't help us a dime. Huh? No, not a bit. We have to work it out all on our own understanding of the divine principle. And that brings again the opposition. That brings again the frictions and the being not acknowledged, and not be in with everything. Here, Jesus stood alone. He was alone at the cross. Just a few women were standing there, and John. When you come to the point where you have to prove your principle, one is always alone. And that's a good thing. It's a terrifically good thing. Then we don't rely on the person and person's help. And one has to experience that over and over, and only then really one feels one has a background. One is backed up by a real authority. The fifth subject of life, we see that atonement demands the laying down of a material sense of life, which to human sense appears as persecution. See, you have perhaps learned in the study of the synonymous terms that life is the way, the method, the way of life. And the counterfeit of the way of life is persecution. You persecute. Persecution is also a method of life. You go along a certain line, but it's always against something. And therefore, in the textbook you will find very often, either in the main tone or mostly in the subtones when it comes to life, a sense of persecution. Because what is the persecutor? The persecutor, Mrs. Eddy says, is to hold spirit in the grasp of matter. That is the persecutor. To try to, the attempt to have life in matter, to have living matter, to see that we should live in the body, that we should live in matter, that we should live in a society, that we should live in a surrounding of friendships. We are all buried into some little thing, and we act according to that narrow little thing, the narrow circle of friends, the narrow circle of a business, the narrow circle of a country, the narrow circle of a body, the narrow circle of all these things. We act according to that, and that's limited. Life demands us to break out of all that limitation, and to really see that we have to have a completely free sense of life that is not limited in any way by any limitation of the human mind. But that naturally brings persecution, because the moment the others don't live in that free sense of life, but in a narrow sense of life, we find no place therein. We are outcasts, because we are living outside. So we are out and cast out. You have to do that. You have to be willing to do that. If we are not willing to do that, we can have Christian Science as a very nice religion and it's comfortable. It's a cozy corner, but not more than that. The real strength that Jesus had came because he was a loner. Because he had an ideal and did stick to that ideal and was willing to go through anything for that ideal. That's why he pulled through. He had that complete devotion which said, I don't count the costs. Life doesn't count the cost. And this is a terrific subject here of the demand of life. Life that is unlimited. Life that is not in time and space, life that is not in anything, not in a friendship, not in a family, not in a business, not in a nation, not in a race. You have to break out from that and see that life is spirit. Then it is free. Once Mrs. Eddy has shown these five great fundamentals of mind, overcoming inaction, of spirit, purifying our thought, of soul, giving us the strength of perseverance and principle, asking that we build our life on an understanding of principle and of people and of life, being willing to lay down a false concept of life, then it is as if she would feel, I have asked a lot of the reader. And I have to tell him in truth that this is the truth about man, and that that truth can be demonstrated. At that point, she picks up Jesus as an exemplar and shows through the life story of Jesus, shows that these demands can be fulfilled, and in fulfilling these demands, Jesus made the great. So in truth, we have a picture of that the possibility of man's atonement with God is exemplified in Jesus' life work. As I said, gives a chronological description of Jesus' life and shows how step by step through the subtones now, she recapitulates now, so step by step that he fulfilled these demands which she has shown in the first five tones. She has there an interesting statement in that paragraph, because for the first time in the textbook she uses the term idea. She says, the Christ dwelt forever an idea in the bosom of God. So she said, the Christ is always at the point of at one month, is always reconciled. So the Christ dwelt forever an idea in the bosom of God, the divine principle of the man Jesus. And woman perceived the spiritual idea, though at first faintly developed. And it shows that it needs really the woman sense within us to fulfill atonement, because the woman sense within us can perceive the idea, can see that man is idea, not a man, not a man that has to fight his way through. But woman can perceive that atonement presents the unity of God and man as an established fact, and therefore on this established fact we can make our demonstration. So she here for the first time, idea comes in and says, actually, it's not you that have to do it. It's the idea itself that carries you on. But that idea did what? It revolutionized the world. I am come to bring the sword and not peace at that moment. This is the chapter on Atonement and Eucharist. You can feel that it is a very strong chapter, that it demands of the human an enormous lot. But then when she has shown that it demands of the human an enormous lot, and has shown that actually there is an idea behind it, and not the human effort, then she brings in the last subject of love, which covers nearly the half of the chapter. And in that tone of love, she shows that the design of love enforces atonement. And it is as if you feel suddenly light, no more having to struggle with error, with the human and with the world. Suddenly you feel that here she says that the design of love is to reform the sinner, that behind it is love that wants us to do all these things. That therefore it is actually love that wants us what? And you can go right through those tones, that it's actually love that wants us to act according to the law of atonement. That is actually love that wants us to reflect spirit, to get away from matter and to build on spirit. That it is actually love that wants us to free ourselves from evil, from sin. That is actually love as principle that wants us to triumph or to prove God. And in life, that it is actually love that wants us to push us to the point where we are willing to overcome death, to overcome even the grave. And that it is love that wants us to demonstrate man as a fundamentally one with God. It's love that wants to do it. And it is love, finally, as love, as she says, that it is love that is working along the design of universal salvation. Suddenly one feels, oh, it isn't so hard as I was thinking it would be, that I have to go now through the desert, that I have to go as a pioneer, as a loner, through all the persecution, through all the ridicule, through all the misunderstanding, through all the misrepresentation, through all the losing of friends. It's actually not I that have to do it. There is a divine idea behind it, at the point of truth, which says at the point of love, you know, that idea is not your idea, but it's the idea of love. Love wants you to save. He wants you to save, and you, as a human, actually don't see how you can be saved. You try to find peace and harmony and the niceties of life here in the human, and you don't find it. And nobody has ever found it. So love is that terrific Christ idea, that terrific Christ power that comes into our human life and forces us to make those steps which we do not like to make humanly. This is what we have to accept. Let's quickly see the interrelationship of prayer and atonement and Eucharist. See, if we take atonement and Eucharist without the chapter on prayer, then we would have a feeling, here I'm asked to fulfill the demands of the Christ. And something within us would say, from where should I get the power and the authority and the strength to do that? If Atonement and Eucharist would be the first chapter, we would feel very weak. very powerless. Say, I don't have the strength to do that. I don't have the strength to stand up against the world. I don't have that. But because the chapter on prayer has preceded, and the chapter on prayer has already taught us that we are not a human, but that man is at one with God, that prayer was actually establishing man's unity with God, and that in our consciousness, in our mentality, we are strengthening and establishing the consciousness that man is one with mind and one with spirit and one with soul and principle and life, truth and love. Out of that authority, I can act. I have a terrific authority behind me. So you can see, if we put the seven subjects together, mind and atonement and Eucharist, we can see that through the unity I have gained in mind in prayer, being one with mind, therefore I have the authority of mind, which gives me the power to act according to mind in atonement and Eucharist. I can act on the authority of mind and no more on my own authority. In prayer, in spirit, through my unity with spirit, reflecting the divine nature in prayer, I have within myself the authority for the chapter Atonement and Eucharist, really, to get away from the false and put all my trust in the spiritual. Or in soul, I begin to see I have to start with prayer and see that man's unity with soul gives me the sinlessness of soul. And with that sinlessness of soul, I have the authority in atonement and Eucharist to persevere in that sinlessness. And so go the way from sin, from sense to soul. And so in principle, you establish first in prayer in your quiet corner of your consciousness, listening quietly to the wonderful unity man has with principle, that he is one with principle, united with principle, and we feel that we have behind us the authority of principle, and that naturally in the second chapter gives us the divine authority always to act according to principle and not according to personal opinions. We feel a terrific authority behind us and say, what do personal opinions matter in this sense, in this case? They don't matter. Principles, concept matters. Or if we have in prayer that unity with life, where we could see there is deep devotion, deep consecration of life, then that deep consecration to the one life becomes our authority from which we can act in atonement and Eucharist and therefore are able to lay down a mortal sense of life. Can you see what I do? I always try to get my authority in prayer and not in the chapter itself, in atonement and Eucharist itself. My authority is built up in prayer, it's built up through truth by shutting out error, by affirming truth, and so I build up within myself a truth consciousness, and therefore in atonement and Eucharist I'm able to stand to the true idea man, and therefore can reject really the false concept of man. And so in love, when I see in prayer that man has a unity with love, and love, to love, things are known which are unknown to the world, but known to God, I can see, oh, love has a plan that is unknown to man, but known to God, and therefore I am willing to let myself be guided by the plan of love, no matter what it presents to me. I know that love has a design, has a plan, and will lead me in that plan rightly. Yeah. That's the chapter on Atonement and Eucharist. One can see that one of the main points is actually to have the willingness to follow truth without first asking what are the costs. This is something that usually the religionists don't like and which most Christian Scientists don't like. They feel, I take Christian Science because it gives me an easier way of life. Well, Jesus never did choose the easier way of life. He always chose the other way. He always went up to the mount and filled his consciousness in prayer, and then with that authority in his consciousness, he came right down to the people and let the people do with him what they wanted to do with him and prove that he is untouched by people's mentality, people's act. This made him the master. This made him the glorified. And not to choose the nice way. He could have chosen the nice way. He had enough understanding to go the way that Enoch went and that Elijah went. He could have done that. He has seen Elijah on the Mount of Transfiguration. He could have done that too. And he just could have said, goodbye, my dear. I go into the desert and then you will see me no more. I ascend. But he said, no, that doesn't save the world. To go the way of niceties is not saving the world. To go the way through the Red Sea is saving the world. To show that you can go through all the difficulties. And this is the chapter of Atonement and Eucharist. To show that if we go the way of that Jesus went, that it is not an easy way, it's not the path of flower, it has perhaps no immediate reward. Jesus didn't have an immediate reward. Perhaps we have no recompense for our sacrifices, for all what we have taken up. You know, the Christian Scientists don't like that idea. They like to have immediate demonstrations, without pain, without anything. But Mrs. Eddy never had it. She had a very burdensome life. Well, hasn't she? We forget that. We forget that. And Jesus didn't have. And we try to get around it. We try to get around it. Because we have never tasted the beauty and the holiness of going through the fire. But once one has tried it out, and has tried out how wonderful it is, how satisfactory it is, that there is nothing so satisfactory than to go through the fire, and if possible come out without the smell of the fire. That is the highest satisfaction one can have, because it's the Christ experiencing the manifestation of the idea in spite of the flesh, in spite of error. In spite of. So, Mrs. Eddy wanted us to go through Atonement and Eucharist. Ask us to go through it, no matter what really the effects are. Now, it reminds me really of what your wonderful Olympia winner Spitz said when they asked him why he thought that he could win so many gold medals. And he said he was willing to go through the pain barrier. Said in exercising there comes a terrific pain, corporeal pain on him. And if we could stand through the pain barrier, then you can do it. Atonement and Eucharist is the pain barrier through which we all have to go if we want to succeed. We do not preach pain. We do not preach hell. We do not preach suffering. But the human, if it is not willing through science to give way easily to the idea, then it goes through the way of suffering. And it's a way, it's a method. And if we choose that method because we are not yet perhaps willing to choose the way of science, and who is willing to go the way of science, then we jolly well have to go through the way of suffering and go through that pain barrier. It's not so bad. It's not so bad. You know, all what is needed is actually what is needed also when you go through the sound barrier. The pilot has to use then opposite movements. When he goes through the sound barrier, he has to move his things in a different way than before the sound barrier. That's why it took so long and so many plane crashes to find out what to do after the sound barrier. Because I don't know if you have ever read that story, the first one who went through the sound barrier, that he has found out that he has to do the very opposite movement with his steering, what you call it?
Control.
Yeah, steer control. With his stick. He had to do the very opposite. And so because they didn't do it, they all crashed. And only when they did the opposite movement, they went up again when they were through the sound barrier. And here it is so too. We are experienced the system of reference, the human system of reference, as pain, until we are through, and we are through then when we use another system of reference. When our whole mentality is geared to science instead of the human. And our whole mentality begins to operate according to science and is very strict according to science, says, what does it matter that people don't understand me? What does it matter that I make not a career like people in the business world? What does it matter that I don't earn so much money as I would have made if I had stayed in the business? What does it matter? What does it matter? What does it matter if I stick to principle? That matters. Then you have broken through the pain barrier. The pain barrier is only there as long as we would like to have the spiritual and yet to fulfill the material. Then we have the pain barrier. We would like to have heaven in the human system of reference, and it can't be done. So, when students come to me and say, what is missing that I don't seem to make any progress? One of my answers is, if you like to have more progress in your life, just go to Atonement and Eucharist. And you just sit down quietly. And you read sentence by sentence. And after every sentence, ask yourself very honestly, am I willing to do that or not? Try it if you want. Try and read every sentence, not those which we like, but every sentence, and say after every sentence, am I willing? Thy will be done, or is my will be done? And you will find that it's very, very, very hard to say to everyone, yes. And because we don't say yes, or because we feel it's hard to say yes, we have the pain barrier. And we can't break right through. But it's a good test to just go through that text quietly and after every sentence say, am I honest? Am I sincere? Do I really want Christian Science as it is stated in the book, or do I want Christian Science the way I would like it? This is the crucial question.